Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
Good morning. It is the Sunday morning wake-up call on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. This is your reliable, monthly, substitute host, Sean McCord. The last time I sat in this chair in front of this microphone was the day after August 12th, when I had to sit here with my guests and talk about schooling and education in Albemarle County, and we couldn't. We spent the first 20 minutes just talking about our community, what had happened the day before with the, quote, Unite the Right rally, and the horror that was visited upon us as a community. So I knew that the next time I came in here, I'd want to talk about this in a deliberate way and bring in people who could talk about what we're doing as a community to heal from the events of August 11 and August 12, when Charlottesville was invaded. My guests are Rebecca Kendall of the Community Mental Health Wellness Coalition and Kate Hudgens, a board-certified trainer in psychodrama and group psychotherapy with a PhD in clinical psychology. And both of these women are working with other people to start groups, to reach out to community members to help us heal. Rebecca through the Community Mental Health Wellness Coalition, and Kate through her group, or Facebook group, Recover Seaville. So let's talk a little bit about the groups first. And Rebecca, I'll start with you, and just sort of jump in and tell us about the coalition, and which existed before this month, what your mission has been and what your mission is down now and what you're doing. And then we'll just kind of cut back and forth between Rebecca Kendall and Kate Hudgens.
Great. Thanks, Sean. So the coalition is a group of over 20 different safety net providers of mental health and substance use disorder services that are working together to form a more effective system. So our mission is collaborating to promote behavioral health and wellness through planning, advocacy, and access to effective service delivery. And we are made up of organizations like Region 10, the Women's Initiative, On Our Own, Partner for Mental Health, Charlottesville Free Clinic, the health systems, UVA Health System, Martha Jefferson, many criminal justice organizations. And what we do is we're working together to help connect our resources across the community and to plan for effective service delivery. And so some of the things that we do is really help to promote access and utilization of these local services. Charlottesville is very lucky to have a lot of local resources comparatively to other communities around Virginia. And we have an information and referral line, ways that we are trying to get information out to the community through our Help Happens Here campaign, where we're trying to reduce stigma around mental health, trying to promote awareness of local resources. We also are working towards developing a more culturally responsive workforce and making changes to policy and systems and environment to improve mental health in our community. And I can talk a little bit more about what that means in relationship to August 12th, 11th, and 12th events. But in a nutshell, that's who we are and what we do.
And if people want to find out more about the Health Happens Here campaign, where do they go to for that information?
Help Happens Here.
I'm sorry.
Yep, and you can go to www.helphappenshere.org. And we have information about all the local safety net providers. We're really trying to connect people with licensed providers that are provide free or affordable local services. And then we also have a information and referral line, and that number is 434-227-0641. And that line operates 9 to 4 weekdays, but they will return calls. And if people have questions about local services, are dealing with stress or feeling like they might have like more substantial impact of trauma related to the violence in our community, that's a number folks can call to get connected with services, both through the organizations that are part of the coalition, but now also with private therapists that are volunteering their time.
And that number, they can also get it, if they didn't write it down, from the Help Happens Here website.
Yes.
Excellent. All right. Hold that thought. Yep. Speaking of websites, Kate, I actually, that's how I found out about your group, because I had many friends who were either joining or supporting the Recover Seville group. So you are a internationally recognized trauma expert, and you've been living here in Charlottesville for 22 years, but most of the work you've been doing has not been here. Mm-hmm. But after August 12th, he said, you've got tools.
Yeah.
That you can bring to bear to help us through this. So talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. I'm glad to be able to be here and have this opportunity. Recover Charlottesville, Recover Seville is the name of the page.
Right. And just if you go on Facebook, just type in @ Recover Seville.
Exactly.
And go directly to the page.
Yeah, and you'll see this event that we're putting together September 27th at mm-hmm. the Haven. It will actually be the beginning of a 6-month program. Where we'll meet once a month for open forums in the community using the creative arts, using theater, using applied theater, using action methods. Because what we find with trauma is that things get stuck in the part of our brain that just leads us to keep the images going again and again and again and right. again. And right now we're in a stage of post-traumatic stress. We are not yet in a stage of post-traumatic stress disorder. It takes 6 months for it to be diagnosed as a disorder. So if in five more months, our community is still going around and around and around with the images and the feelings and the defenses against the feelings, then we will have not only individuals in our community with post-traumatic stress disorder, but we will be a community in a state of post-traumatic stress disorder. And so what Recover Charlottesville is about, Recover Seville, is joining together once a month using creative artists who are also psychologists, social workers, educators, business people, volunteers from the community, to get together to be able to start talking about these things in new and creative ways. You know, we're hoping to use some art therapy, some applied theater, some drama techniques, and some open dialogue, small group work, and just to give a place for people to start talking about things so we don't go back into denial.
Denial. That's interesting, because I haven't, maybe you have a clinical understanding of denial that is broader than my common understanding. But if anything, I feel like our community, you know, still wants to talk about this.
Mm-hmm, which is great.
They still want this to be on the front burner.
Yes.
Charlottesville has become mm-hmm. a meme outside of our yeah. town. And in one sense, it's good that people know what happened here, mm-hmm. but on the other hand, there's been a lot of misinterpretation. If mm-hmm. there's denial going on, it seems to me, it mm-hmm. more of it seems to be coming from outside the community. Mm-hmm. So talk to me about that. Talk to me about the mm-hmm. how you as a board certified trainer are approaching these questions of mm-hmm. denial.
Well, I mean, I think that our community has actually been broken out of decades, if not centuries, of denial by this violence. Mm. I think we've denied all the isms in our progressive southern town, thinking that this was a nice, safe place to live. That was certainly my impression. And, you know, that all got disrupted.
But wasn't it disrupted by outsiders coming into our town?
You know, at some level, it doesn't really matter what's disrupted our denial. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that it has been. And now we have an opportunity to do something about it. We have an opportunity to let things go back the way they were, or to even raise up arms and, you know, kind of like lots of rah, 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 but not have much action that really, really changes anything. So we are in a time where we can have a choice of post-traumatic stress disorder or post-traumatic growth. And growth is saying, yes, these are problems, racism, homophobia, whatever it is that is the ism that people haven't wanted to talk about, and to start talking about it in a way that's inclusive for everybody. And so denial is certainly a psychological phenomena, but it's a community phenomena. And that's what we're hoping with this project. You know, I think the community coalition and, you know, many private practitioners are doing a great job at offering free services, trauma-informed services. And we have lots of people at the university level coming in and being great talkers, you know, guests from out of the community. But this is really for people in the community so that they don't go back into denial and they have a place to express some feelings and some thoughts.
So when you talk about denial, you're not necessarily talking about denial of what happened on mm-hmm. August 12th, but denial of the underlying problems
right.
that were kind of, the veneer was ripped off
exactly.
by the events of August 12th.
Exactly.
And I agree with you. That's exactly what we spoke about, what I spoke about when I was last mm-hmm. on the radio here, mm-hmm. that the people, these outsiders who came to this town didn't target Charlottesville by random chance.
Yeah.
That it was never just about a statue, but mm-hmm. the fact that we live in a community that was built on slavery
yep.
and racism. And we are, as you say, a Southern progressive town, mm-hmm. and we're very proud of that. And we're a deliberate community. We have long community discussions about the width of sidewalks and what kind of architecture is allowed mm-hmm. here and whether or not to have parking meters. And what kind of shops we have in town, because we want this to be a community that we take pride in, but by having these discussions about the way we present ourselves, we haven't been having discussions mm-hmm. about the soil upon which this town mm-hmm. has been built, the soil that, you know, mm-hmm. Is red with the blood of generations of slaves and bigotry. And so when the outsiders came into town with their flags and their sticks and their guns, they just kind of ripped the Band-Aid off.
Mm-hmm.
And that Band-Aid, if I could stretch my metaphor to the point of breaking, may have been the very denial that you were talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is what our opportunity is about. So I was reading an article from the New York Times this morning by Claudia Rakine. She's a poet from Yale. And she talks about, the title of it is Charlottesville an exception or the rule?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that article.
And I very much liked what she said. She says, as much as I flinch when I hear people say, this moment is an opportunity. It is. And it will be, as all of the next ones will be.
Yeah.
And it's just, oh, you know, it's like, this is so amazing and difficult to have this in our community. You know, I've worked in war zones. I've worked with active violence in, you know, the UK when Ireland was still. And this is, like, to have it in my community
yeah.
is just so intense.
We were a war zone.
Yeah, we were. And we still are.
And I, you know, I have friends and family not here, in other parts of the country, who, you know, when we were posting on social media, this is serious and this is going to be bad, and they didn't really understand what was going on. And now I had a family member who publicly on her Facebook page apologized to me, said I for not realizing, not really taking seriously what we were talking about until yeah. the whole world was watching. Rebecca, the Community Mental Health Wellness Coalition, as we said, existed before August 12th. Mm-hmm. But tell me what happened. Tell me about the discussions you had and how you had to mobilize and how you did, if you did, had to change your mission after August 12th.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I happened to be out of town prior to August 12th and returned mid the next week.
Right.
And there was a variety of different kinds of mobilization that we saw. But what we really saw was that people, and this is substantiated by the research about disasters, whether they're natural disasters or human disasters, we could call what happened here in the community, is that people go to their natural networks. They go to their places where they feel safe.
Sure.
And have strong relationships and connections. And so what that meant is that there were some places and organizations that had huge, intense, immediate needs and demands. Trusted organizations like the Women's Initiative had a couple of therapists that were actually very active in pre-rally, during the rally, post-rally. Huge amount of demand. School-based counselors that already had certain relationships with families, intense demand. We have peer support workers that work in public housing, right? And that they were very much in demand. People went to their churches, that the clergy that were very involved all through the summer in planning the response to the white supremacy in the community. So the natural networks were really the places where people are going, went immediately, and are continuing to go. And that's really common, and that's, as I said, substantiated by the research. So the coalition is really looking to help support those networks. The other thing that was happening is that there's a group of private providers, trauma-informed, the Trauma Recovery Network, other providers that were really active doing EMDR and other...
I'm sorry, EMDR.
Yeah, thanks for stopping me with my alphabet soup. Eye movement reprocessing desensitization. It's a trauma approach to trauma that has to do with movement of the eyes and the connection of both hemispheres of the brain, that the movement of the eyes resets the brain. And there's certain ways that that can be useful immediately upon a traumatic event. So there were a group of private therapists that really self-deployed in response to the rallies and were there and present. Those therapists also very, very in demand. So, you know, because they were there, they had the trusted relationships with the folks and the activists that were on the front line, a lot of need and desire for service. So there, with that group of therapists and other therapists in the community, you know, I mentioned there's a lot of talent and educated folks in the community, a lot of therapists per capita, really, in Charlottesville compared to other communities, came together and had a community meeting the Wednesday after August 12th to say what could they do as a psychotherapy community. And there's over 50 therapists, including a variety of group practices, the Trauma Recovery Network, CAVA, other group practices that came together to offer pro bono services to the community.
Can you remind me what CAVA is?
Counseling. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do it justice.
Okay.
It's a private counseling group in the Charlottesville area. And so all of these different providers have came together to say, we want to give back to the community. We want to offer services to the community. And so those therapists, if folks are still dealing with the impact and the stress and the trauma, are available with, that can be connected with through the Help Happens Here referral lines. So they have a list of those therapists. And we know that relationship is really, really important in terms of healing. And the research shows that more than any particular modality of therapy, that it's really the healing relationship that's most important. And so issues of culture are very, very important. And that's one of the longstanding objectives that we are trying to work towards in the coalition, is to build a culturally responsive workforce. So for those pro bono therapists, we have information about whether they have trauma training and experience, whether they are providers of color, whether they are queer-affirming therapists, because we know that culture is a huge part of the healing process.
My guest talking about the healing process in Charlottesville is Rebecca Kendall, the Community Mental Health Wellness Foundation, and Dr. Kate Hudgens. We'll be back in just a moment. We are back on WPVC, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. This is Sean McCord with my guest, Rebecca Kendall of the Community Mental Health Wellness Coalition, and Dr. Kate Hudgens, who is an expert on trauma and recovery. Kate, let's go back and talk. You mentioned in passing, but let's talk a little bit more about the Recover Charlottesville community event coming up on Wednesday, September 27.
So as I mentioned, that's the first of monthly events that are going to be dedicated to post-traumatic growth in the Charlottesville community. And it will be, we meet at the Haven at 5:45, and there will be free food, and some coffee, I understand. And most of all, it's an opportunity that we will come together using the creative arts. So we'll be using, like images that people will work with. We'll be doing some small group discussions. We'll be doing some, possible role plays. And at the end of the night, the thing that's really important is we hope to break down into some small actionable groups, so that even in between the months, there are groups that are forming in the community that have identified problems during our evening and have committed to spending some time together to try to see what they can do. And it sounds like, well, Rebecca, you're bringing all these great opportunities. You know, I would love to know more about them and have a good list for those so that we could have them available to people. You know, because we are about trying to create this opportunity for post-traumatic growth. And like Rebecca was saying, it's relationships that are one of the most important things. So we've done two focus groups in the last month in the community. And what we've seen is that the strengths that are coming out is that people are more open with their feelings.
Yes.
You know, like we're connecting on a feeling level. We are talking about things we haven't talked about before. And yes, we all like congregate to our safety places, but for many people there's this opening to be able to say, okay, and let's reach across the aisle, if you will, or you know, the differences, at least beginning. And so that's the things that can come out of this. You know, like we can come out stronger. We don't have to like be traumatized and be a, you know, a role model, an icon of, you know, Charlottesville in trauma. We can be an icon for Charlottesville in recovery. And that does mean, you know, owning our own strengths, making our relationships stronger, and having a stronger presence in the community. I mean, that's particularly telling for me. I've lived here for 22 years and had a very small presence in the community. And so, you know, it is a time to say, okay, let's step up the plate, and what can each one of us do to help? And I don't know what the outcome is going to be of our September 27th event. All I know is that we're going to create a safe space with everything we can for people to come and tell us what they need and see what we can form as a group of professionals to help them.
That event, again, the first what are going to be monthly events, Wednesday, September 27th at the Haven, starting at 5:45. The Haven, everyone should know where it is, but it's on 112 West Market Street, not coincidentally, right across the street from Emancipation Park.
Yes, and it is a free event. All of the professionals, we're all donating our time and our services because we want to give back to the community. And so there's no charge for community members coming.
So if you want to find out more about it and you're on Facebook, just look for at Recover Seville. It'll take you right there. Or just show up on Wednesday, September 27th.
You also can go to my website, which is therapeuticspiralmodel.com.
I'm going to say that again, therapeuticspiralmodel.com.
Yep, that's the website for our organization, Therapeutic Spiral International, because we are a trauma-informed community that teaches how to deal with post-traumatic stress in the international community. And we actually have a certification program in trauma therapy.
So I'm throwing this question out for both of you, but Rebecca, I'll give you a chance to talk. Who needs counseling right now? That's kind of a loaded question. But the reason I ask is, I mentioned earlier a friend of mine who was right there on the downtown mall at the 4th Street crossing, you know, the car that roared down the street and killed Heather Heyer, missed her by inches, and she's still dealing with this. And she took time off work. She went on the Seaville to D.C. march, and she's doing the steps she needs to help heal herself. But there are other people, like, I wasn't there. I wasn't there downtown. I was at UVA and helping out with the events that were being sponsored there, and then we shut down at noon and we closed the university, and I went home and was worried about my wife who was downtown. So we all have our stories, but some people who are outside of the community, you know, when I talk about my friend who was there and almost mowed down by the car, you go, yeah, of course. Of course this is traumatic. Of course she needs help. But come on, McCord. You know, you were sitting in the comfort of your living room with your kids a couple of miles away. And yet I felt it too. And there are lots of other people who you didn't have to be downtown.
Right.
Because it wasn't just that afternoon. It was, you know, it started weeks before, months before. Some might even say it started the day after the elections in November.
Right.
And this buildup of tension, of having our little safe community kind of being ripped apart. So if someone says, well, look, I have a friend who was there downtown, or I have children, and yet they still have trouble sleeping at night.
Right.
Or they have trouble explaining to their friends and family outside of town what it's like being here. Who are the people that are going to need just someone to talk to need to rebuild these relationships?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I'm really glad that you're asking it. And I think the short answer is we are all impacted, and trauma affects people. A traumatic event affects people in different ways. So there's risk factors, there's resiliency factors that impact how people process a traumatic event. And I think the important question is to ask sort of, what are you noticing in your day-to-day life? Are you experiencing sleep disruption, like you mentioned? Are there changes in your appetite? Are there changes in your relationship? Are you finding yourself edgy and irritable and getting into conflicts? Are you having work problems, having trouble focusing, functioning at work? So I think really the importance is to look for changes in your feelings, in your behavior, in your physiology, and to take those things seriously. There is a movement in trauma-informed care away from, we used to talk about, like, secondary trauma. So there's the folks who were downtown on the mall directly impacting, witnessing a traumatic event.
Mm-hmm.
There's caregivers who are helping to provide treatment services to those individuals. There are first responders who were maybe not even on site downtown, but were deployed at a remote location, who are still dealing and processing the stress of the event. And we used to sometimes, there used to be a term of secondary trauma. And I think the movement in trauma-informed care is that we don't have a hierarchy of trauma. It's really important to recognize those changes in physiology, in feeling, in behavior, in relationships, and to take them seriously, and to know that we all have different mechanisms of coping. You mentioned your friend who went on the march to D.C., and one of the things that is important to trauma resolution is to be able to feel like you can take effective action. And so if you can reestablish a sense of self-efficacy, of being able to impact changes in your life, that's a protective factor. And so if for your friend, being able to march in solidarity with others and to say no to the rise of white supremacy in our nation, then that is a protective factor. But really the important thing is to notice those changes and to take it seriously and to not doubt yourself if you are feeling impacted, not belittle, like, oh, I wasn't there, I wasn't on the front lines, so I'm not really impacted. I was at a meeting yesterday. There was a Responding to Hate Without Hatred event that was hosted by a number of local organizations and faith-based groups, and I heard somebody refer to a sense of survivor guilt, like, I wasn't there, I was out of town, and that's a common feeling. I feel that myself. I was out of town during the event, and I think that, you know, we are all impacted, and it's a time, as Dr. Hudgens says, to reach out and to connect across different divides and to take the impacts on our lives seriously and to build the social connections and the outlets and the healthy activities that make us feel strong and good as a community and as individuals very seriously.
And I've been talking about healing, but as with any healing, there's going to be scars left. And what I hope, and I think what a lot of people hope, is that as we heal, we don't simply try to reset everything back to the way it was before, what we were talking about earlier, Kate. And I think that's important for individuals to recognize that they're having trauma, even if they weren't there, or they're having survival guilt, or they're feeling something. But what about approaching other people in your life, you know, a spouse or a friend or a neighbor or an in-law, and you think they're dealing with something, or they're going through something and they're maybe not dealing with it? How do we have that conversation? Kate, I'll ask this question of you. How do we have this conversation with someone? How do we sit down with someone and say, you know, is there something maybe that you're going through that you want to talk about? And if you don't want to talk about it with me, can we help you find someone to talk to?
Yeah. So I wanted to mention the children. Because one of the things that we learned in research with 9/11 was that when the children kept watching the pictures over and over again of the Twin Towers, they thought it was still happening. Every single time, the children who didn't have the ability to look at a television show and think that happened yesterday or a month ago or a year ago, they saw that over and over and over again, and they kept thinking it was happening. That's one of the reasons the children were so scared. And that's what's, you know, possibly happening to children in Charlottesville. You know, and one of the ways they'll show that is through drawings. One of the ways they'll show that is through their feelings. And so, you know, it's important to have these creative outlets. I mean, that's the reason that we're using creative arts methods for our program, is because, you know, children naturally learn through play. They naturally learn through interacting with people and through playful activities. And so we're trying to rebuild that resilient state when we come together so that people can even see if they're off that baseline. But, you know, it's important for the teachers to know that if kids are disrupted, if they're showing disruptive behavior, you know, like, talk to the parents about, you know, are you still watching this on the television? Are you still watching it on the computer? Like, protect the kids from that. But, you know, I think what we hope with Recover Seville is to be able to teach people some of the earmarks of, like, that Rebecca just mentioned, you know, of what is post-traumatic stress and what does it look like. So educate people at a level that is understandable. So, you know, it's like, yeah, you get angry a lot and you didn't get angry so much before. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you just want to be alone more than you wanted to be alone. You know, take it out of the psychological words and just look at normal everyday behavior for children, for spouses, for our community. And I keep thinking as I'm sitting here, like, you know, we talk about Charlottesville as a safe community. I'm not sure it's always been a safe community for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's what we're finding out. Is that, you know, we're talking about this because we've lived in a part of Charlottesville that has felt safe. At least I have. And my life has pretty much been that way. But, you know, what we're finding out is that that's not true for everybody. And so I think a lot of it is just about listening and opening our eyes and, you know, seeing what's not just in our relationships, but what is happening in the broader community.
We as a community are confronting white supremacy, and there are other people in this town who have been confronting white supremacy for generations.
Living that life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know people who still don't want to go downtown.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't necessarily there.
Yeah.
They saw the events unfold on TV, and it is weird. Let's recognize that. It is weird to be watching a national news report and seeing these deplorable people marching through our town and going, oh, look, that's where they're walking right past the news rack where I pick up my Seville Weekly.
Right.
They're going right past my restaurant.
Yeah.
And it's a sense of disconnect. I mean, I watched it. I watched the infamous Vice documentary.
Yes.
Where the reporter followed that group around.
I was telling.
And I'm looking, well, wait a minute, that looks like Charlottesville in the background.
Yeah.
I've stood on that very corner, and yet my brain is going, no, this is a movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so those are some of the signs, too. You know, what Rebecca said were like the active trauma signs, but the other things are avoidance.
Yeah.
Are, you know, not thinking about it. You know, substance abuse increases.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything to get away from it, like that's the opposite side of a trauma response. You know, there's the disruptive ones that you can see, and then there's the ones where the people are withdrawing or having avoidance. And that's that piece around denial, too. Like, you know, if you keep avoiding all of this, then we won't get through the denial and to another state. But it's a normal state of affairs to have that right now. It's just like, is it still there in 6 months?
Sure. So the language here, because before we went on the air, you two were making sure that you were coming in with a common language as people who are part of the mental health wellness community. But we don't always, you know, those of us who aren't in your community, who benefit from the services you offer, we don't always know what language to use. Is it wrong for me? Is it wrong for us to say things like confront white supremacy? Because that's kind of a that's kind of a war-tinged language. What frame of mind should we have in order to help ourselves heal?
I think that's a very individual process, and it's a process of really kind of learning to help track what helps you feel as an individual safe. We kind of talked about there's different responses to trauma, right? That where you can get hyper aroused and activated, and the nervous system is, you know, jittery and anxious and hyper aroused, and then there's a response where is hypo aroused and you're kind of numbed out and kind of depressed, and there's an optimal response zone right in there.
Yes.
Right. So that's something that you know about yourself and you can study for yourself. And I think language is very nuanced, and that's very tied also to culture. So various cultures might feel differently about different kinds of language. Individuals might feel different based on their own experiences and past. So I don't think there's a right and wrong answer there. But the important thing is to be able to notice and track the impact on you of certain language, and also for all of us to be able to track the impact on others, since we're trying to come together as a community in building a sense of safety across the community and understanding the experience of marginalized communities, that for this event is not new to them, right? The sense of lack of safety for marginalized communities is an everyday experience. And so that's part of our work, where we're wanting to build a more culturally responsive workforce that understands those nuances about language and can track and check in and understand people across those cultural connections. So, you know, we used to talk about cultural competency, and it's not really People can't be competent in all cultures. It's about being humble and being able to approach a healing relationship with a sense of humility and learning. And so when we're using language, it's nuanced, and social media has blown everything up even more so. And I just think the importance is tracking your own response and being humble and aware and tracking the impact of language on others.
In addition to humility, I would add grace and gratitude. My guests are Rebecca Kendall of the Community Mental Health Wellness Coalition, Dr. Kate Hudgens. You're listening to The Wake Up Call on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. This is Sean McCord on The Wake Up Call. We are talking about healing after August 12th. And the reason I wanted to bring up language just before the break was for two reasons. One, so that we as a community can kind of have a common set of terms when we're talking about this. And two, because language can be so easily twisted. So when you get people outside of our community, especially those who are, how shall I put this, not connected to the healing that we're trying to make as a progressive community, and who may even in some way support the people who came here to town, they're having a great deal of fun calling us snowflakes and making fun of safe spaces.
Yeah.
And I was getting into arguments with people about that before August 12th. Since then, I haven't had the energy to do so. So for people who have friends, relatives, that brother-in-law who just listens to right-wing radio all the time and loves to argue, how do we respond as individuals to accusations that we're all just being a little bit too tender and a little bit too touchy-feely? Do we have a good answer for that?
Well, I mean, it's certainly something I've thought of. With the reason we do use the creative arts is because it goes across languages. Mm-hmm. It allows people to communicate through pictures, through just shared storytelling, through shared experiences. But, yeah, it's still kind of touchy-feely, let's get together and look at pictures of the chalk drawings and, share our thoughts and feelings about that. And, I think the important thing is, after we've done that, after we've created, I don't like to call it a safe space. I like to call it a neutral space.
Okay.
Like, what we're hoping for is a neutral space where anybody, including your right-wing,
brother-in-law,
could come and have a say. And that we hope to create a safe environment there for anybody to have their say so that people can listen to each other. Because, mm-hmm. It's fine to confront, but if you're not listening, what good does it do? You have to start listening to each other. And that's the most important thing, I think, is just to be able to, have that attitude, the humility to listen.
Well, tell us about using the creative arts to help heal.
So the thing that's really interesting about the creative arts is we've learned about neurobiology of trauma, how it affects the brain in the last 10 years. And what we've seen is that talk therapy used to be the way to try to deal with trauma. But talk doesn't seem to, because it's all about words. Mm-hmm. And many of the traumas, many of the feelings, you can't put into words. And that's because it's locked in the right part of your brain, the part of your brain that is about feelings and experiences, images. And so what we found in EMDR is a good example. It's a method that brings in the right brain and the left brain so that all creative arts therapies tap into your whole brain. So it isn't that you're just running a rant that but you're actually, being impacted oh, what was that image that I had to deal with too? And so it activates all the brain so that the person is in a more creative state. I mean, the idea is to become in a creative state where you have both your feelings and your thinking so you can create a new action. And the research shows that that's happening, and they're beginning to do some research that shows even with individual cases of PTSD that if you use action experiential therapy, which includes things like EMDR, drama therapy, other things, that it changes your brain in the right direction. So right now our brains are all kind of over, they're either avoiding or they're hypervigilant.
Right. Right.
And what we hope is to create an experience for people once a month that they can come and have a different experience that does involve both their right brain and their left brain to try to move through these impasses that we're having right now. And most, you know, most importantly, like Rebecca said, coming up with new behaviors, new actual things that they can be involved in where they feel heard and feel that they're being listened to.
Rebecca, what kind of new programs is the Community Health Mental Health Wellness Coalition rolling out in response to in response to the events of August 12th? I mean, we've been hearing about Recover Seville, but have you expanded the scope as a wellness community, kind of services you're offering?
Yeah, and so we aren't a direct service provider, but are made up of lots of different individual direct service providers. Our focus is really looking across the system and how we can support behavioral health needs across the system. One of the ways that we're doing that is to be looking at our emergency response system. Mm-hmm. So in every region, there are protocols for how communities respond to a natural or a human disaster. And we are looking to strengthen our mental health supports in that system planning. So we are working with there's a medical reserve corps made up of medical providers, and we know that there were a bunch of the private therapists who sort of self-deployed because they are invested and caring about the community and, you know, wanting to do something to support the community around the rallies that were happening this summer. So we're meeting with the Medical Reserve Corps folks to look at how do we build that system so that in the event of a future disaster, human or man-made, that we are ready to deploy with supported mental health services. There are some curriculums that are evidence-based curriculums for how you deal with mental health during a traumatic event. The immediate deployment, there's a curriculum called Psychological First Aid, and so it is to help support on-the-spot healing response.
Mm-hmm. Can you give an example of that?
A lot of it is coping and developing safety, identifying like safe spaces and being able to, you know, notice when you're in a safe space, developing connections and problem solving. I've not been through the training myself, so I can't talk about it too much. But we're looking to try to bring that training here and to be able to provide training for a core of folks that are ready and interested in responding in these kinds of events.
Sorry, you were mentioning other services.
Yeah, and then there are also post-event service curriculum like that, mm-hmm. The Skills for Psychological Recovery, which we are hoping to bring to do a training of trainers, including faith-based organizations, first responders, folks who are directly impacted that then can turn around and become trainers within their natural networks of these skills. And it's a skill-based curriculum. They find that, you know, when people are trying to sort through a traumatic event, the impact of a traumatic event, you might see somebody only once or twice or three times. And it might not be an ongoing therapeutic relationship. And so how do you help support people with skills in that short period of time? So that's some of what we're trying to look at on a systems level, is how do we develop an emergency response network for the next time. We are helping to get that.
Sorry, you said the next time and I just shuddered.
Well, it's horrifying to think about, but I mean, we're talking about, there's Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma, mm-hmm. You know, in communities that are more prone to natural disaster, they've had to rally these resources in the past in a different way.
So is it fair to compare Houston to Charlottesville, or Florida to Charlottesville, a natural disaster like a hurricane coming in and wiping out infrastructure to what we went through?
You do have the same symptoms. You know, trauma and violence of any kind, whether it's natural-made violence or it's human-made violence, affects our brains, affects our communities and our relationships in the same way. And so, you know, like Rebecca said, there isn't a hierarchy of trauma.
Right.
It's like, how do you respond to trauma that makes the difference? Like, that's why the post-recovery of any trauma is so important, is because if we can build resilience, which is building, increasing our strengths, strengthening our relationships, taking actionable steps to do something different, then, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of trauma it is. But it is pretty horrifying to think we might have to be preparing.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Rebecca, I felt like I interrupted what you were in the middle of.
Yeah, well, I just in addition to that, one of our other long-term objectives with the coalition, as I've mentioned before, is really helping to support a culturally responsive workforce.
Yeah.
So helping to understand the long-term impacts of chronic stress or multi-generational traumas and how we build a workforce that can help support those needs.
So does that mean specifically working with employers, both small and large in town?
What we're looking to do is are working with our existing coalition, with the behavioral health providers across the coalition. We're doing a series of trainings. This was, you know, in process before the events of this summer. So we're doing regular trainings with our coalition partners on cultural humility practices. And I really think as a community, we have a behavioral health workforce shortage in Virginia on the whole.
Do we?
But yes, really helping to develop that culturally responsive workforce, that's a big, longer standing goal that I hope that the community will really embrace during this time period, to look at how do we help build those support systems for communities that are marginalized.
So, when I'm not on the radio, on WPVC, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville, I work at the university. So do you know if there have been discussions with the university, either at large or with individual departments, about some of these very approaches that you're talking about?
Yeah. We work closely with the health system as a behavioral health provider. And so they are a member of our coalition and, you know, have also adopted this, this objective of working in the community to enhance the cultural responsiveness of the workforce. And we'll be a partner and kind of looking at what are our opportunities to provide local trainings and supports for providers. But it's a long haul. I mean, that's not like an immediate response that we can point a finger to, and really to build that kind of workforce competency and expand opportunities for providers of color, paraprofessional, professional, et cetera, that takes a long time.
We've been talking about Charlottesville and how we as a community are healing specifically from very specific traumatic event, but as we go through this, if you were to, and this question is for both of you, but Rebecca, I'll go with you first. If you were to consult with another town, what if another community got in touch with you and said, okay, what do we need? What resources do we need to have in place to prepare for something like this? How would you advise them?
Well, I would send them to the experts, which is part of what we've been doing, is reaching out to the federal organization, the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Association, it's SAMHSA, has a disaster technical assistance center. So there are folks that are available to provide training and technical assistance on preparedness, disaster behavioral health response preparedness. And they're the folks who have directed us to these curricula and to local and regional trainers. So I think, you know, it's really having the community partnerships and the plan in place is really important. That's what I would say. But again, by no means I'm an expert. We're learning by doing here.
Okay. You are an expert.
I am.
You've worked with other communities, in fact, across the globe.
Right. This is what I do.
This is what you do. Yeah, so how do communities who haven't gone through something like this, how do they prepare for some kind of trauma? Right.
So we actually have, as I mentioned, a certification program in trauma therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a professional-only training program. It's a training program for anybody in the community, volunteers, anybody who wants to do that. And what we try to teach them is how to build up resilience, how to own your own strengths, identify the strengths for individuals, identify the strengths in the community, work from there. You know, not just come in and say, oh, everything's a disaster, but anchor in the strengths, increase the relationships, and find ways for people to can take even small action steps so they feel effective and they don't sink into that depressive state as part of the post-traumatic stress event. So, yeah, I have a lot of hope for our community. I just listening today to all the services, and I have a lot of hope that we can actually be an icon for good.
Yeah. So I have in the couple minutes we have left, I have a theory that we as a community are dealing with this, or actually recoiling from this stress in ways that we don't even realize.
Yeah.
There is a good thing happening in Charlottesville next weekend. We're having the concert for Charlottesville.
Yeah.
We're having big names, you know, Native Son Dave Matthews and Justin Timberlake and Ariana Grande. And as soon as it was announced, you know, we should all be excited about it. But of course, there were people who immediately turned around and said, well, that's great that, you know, these millionaire performers are coming to town and a select few people are going to get to see them. But what's it doing to actually address the issues of racism and economic injustice in our town? The answer is, well, nothing really, except, of course, it is a fundraising effort. And then people got into arguments on social media about who got tickets. And you know, if you got tickets, if you were one of the lucky ones enough to get a ticket, shouldn't you give it to somebody else who was more deserving? Mm-hmm. And I think these kind of internecine arguments going on right now over what should be a good and happy event is a reflection of the kind of trauma that we're going through and maybe still dealing with the wounds of August 12th. We have just a minute left. I just want to, first of all, thank you both, my guest Rebecca Kendall, the Community Mental Health Wellness Coalition. Thank you for all the work that you're doing. The website you mentioned, Help Happens Here, people can go there to find out about resources. Dr. Kate Hutchins, international expert on trauma, and your Recover Seville effort, which people can find out by going to on Facebook at Recover Seville, and also your own website at therapeuticspiralmodel.com. And the last 30 seconds before we end the show, do you have a shout out you'd like to give?
I just want to hold out a picture of hope. I think that we are a community that can come together in hope.
Thank you very much, Kate. Rebecca?
I am awed by the amount of creative resources and caring professionals in the community, and I think it's a really important time for providers really to, and for all of us to be nurturing our relationships and really taking good care of ourselves. But I really trust in the creative community and the committed professionals and really, really quality organizations across the community.
And to all of you, our listeners, I just say, love one another. This is Sean McCord on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.